During the Arab-Israeli War of 1948, more than 700,000 Palestinians are forced into exile. It is the Nakba. It means catastrophe in Arabic. The Haganah forces search for the Arabs, and the barricades are set up to identify those who have not abandoned the city. The Haganah is a paramilitary organization that constitutes the core of the Israeli forces and is responsible for the expulsion of Palestinians. Some of them flee on their own will just to escape the violence. Their lands and houses no longer belong to them. Most of them go to Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, or Syria.
Just show us three different facets of the Zionist project. First, some Israeli citizens are enjoying watching the genocide from a hill in the occupied territories and cheering their army doing what the Nazis did with them. It is as if it were a film made in Hollywood. Second, we see an Israeli project, a real estate project to be located in the Gaza Strip, a coastal area oriented towards the north and with tourist potential, highly desired by Western imperialists. Third, we see images of the Nakba and all the destruction and this whole plan known as the Plan Dalet to expel about 700,000 Palestinians, destroying 500 villages, and the life, history, and geography of those who had lived in this territory for centuries. Well, let's see the story on the maps to see the evolution of this, to see if, indeed, as Finkelstein said, what happened on October 7th justifies what came afterwards. Does what has happened in the last 75 years justify the complete dismantling of a fascist and neo-colonial regime like that of Israel? This is Palestine at the beginning of the 20th century, where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and atheists lived together without any problem and in absolute peace and brotherhood, with a proportion of the Jewish population close to 5%. Shortly after, in the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, Theodor Herzl, recognized as the father of contemporary Zionism, presented his project called the Jewish State to form a Jewish national home in Palestine. Of course, the lobby carried out throughout the West and with the main powers of the time allowing them to achieve in 1917 the Balfour Declaration, known as the formal beginning of the Palestinian tragedy. Great Britain, the current England, without having any right to do so, committed themselves to the Zionist organization and to give Palestine a group of foreigners coming from all over the world. This declaration was put into practice by an illegal immigrant that sought to change things on the ground and change the proportion of the population. In 1947, the population of Jewish religion was about 30%, but above religion, the Zionist population came in, but not only as refugees seeking support, but to start the programs of Tsarist Russia and also the Nazi Holocaust. They came to usurp everything. They made the newly born United Nations, which had been created from the failure of the Society of Nations, approved the partitions of Palestine, an organization that was established to protect the right of self-determination of the people, approved the partition of Palestine. And guess who were not invited to the meeting? The Palestinians. That is, in complete absence of the main owners of the land, they gave 55% of historical Palestine to the Zionist organization and 44% divided into three unconnected zones to the Palestinians. Clearly, there was no possibility that either of these two states would be consolidated as they were intended. Obviously, the Palestinians rejected, but Zionism also rejected it and advanced in the war of 1948 until it occupied 78% of historical Palestine in 1980. What we know today as occupied territory remained in the hands of Jordan and Egypt, but this lasted about 20 years until the war of 1967, where Israel made use of its great military power and its always strong support from the Western powers, and mainly from the United States, from Europe and Germany, tried to pay the blame for the Nazi Holocaust with Palestinian blood. They advanced on the entire territories and on the heights of the Syrian Golan and a strip of Lebanese territories that remained occupied for more than two decades. Today, after years of extermination, after years of a genocidal policy on the parts of Israel with the Oslo Agreement, the Palestinian territories are reduced to a 15%, and also in the form of small bastustans without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the lands to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Un saludo. Greetings. My name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto congreso sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean-Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Spina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovera Collection and Research Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israeli citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while, due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
Lo he mencionado en otros programas.
I have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine.
En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has urged Palestinians to unite amid Israel's ongoing war in Gaza. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The head of the Politburo of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has met Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan as Ankara tries to play a more influential role in efforts to bring an end to Israel's ongoing aggression in the Gaza Strip. Esmail Haniyeh, Hamas's political chief, met Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Istanbul, Turkey on Saturday, 20th of April, just a day after he met Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan in Doha, Qatar, where the Palestinian leader is based. The meeting lasted for more than 2.5 hours, according to reports in the Turkish media, which said that Haniyeh and Erdogan had discussed Israel's attacks on Palestinian lands as well as efforts needed for ensuring the delivery of humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. The two also discussed measures to achieve a fair and lasting peace process in Palestine, said the reports, which indicated that there were no direct mention of the ongoing mediation effort to force an end to more than 6 months of Israeli war in Gaza. Turkey's TRT World said Recep Tayyip Erdogan had said in the meeting that Turkey is tirelessly continuing its diplomatic efforts to draw international attention to the oppression of the Palestinians. He also said in the meeting that recent tensions between Israel and the Islamic Republic of Iran should not divert attention from the plight of Palestinians in Gaza, adding that such a scenario would only benefit the Israeli regime. However, Erdogan's remarks came as Ankara is still being criticized by countries in the region for failing to significantly downsize its trade and economic relations with Israel, a measure they say can force Israel to reduce its atrocities in the Gaza Strip. Recep Tayyip Erdogan's chief diplomat, Hakan Fidan, traveled to Doha, Qatar on Wednesday, 17th of April, to meet Ismail Haniyeh just after Qatari authorities said they would reassess the position of Qatar as a mediator between Hamas and the Israeli regime. Analysts say Erdogan's harsh rhetoric against Israeli regime officials has also made it complicated for Turkey to play the role of a mediator in Gaza. Also, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has praised the combat readiness of Iran's air defense systems and described the Israeli military's unmanned aerial vehicles as more like children's toys. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in an interview with NBC News on Friday, said, "What happened last night was not a strike." The top Iranian diplomat went on to emphasize that Tehran is not seeking to escalate the conflict unless the Israeli regime commits a folly and launches a new attack. Amir Abdullahian said, "As long as there is no new adventurism by Israel against our interests, then we are not going to have any new reactions." Amir Abdullahian, however, underscored that Iran will respond to an immediate and maximum level in case Israel opts to launch an attack. "If Israel takes a decisive action against my country and this is proven to us," Amir Abdullahian added, "our response will be immediate and to the maximum effect and will cause them to regret it." The Iranian foreign minister also said Operation True Promise against Israel was intended to be a warning. Amir Abdullahian said, "We could have hit Haifa or Tel Aviv. We could have also targeted all the economic ports of Israel. But our red lines was civilians," Amir Abdullahian pointed out. He said, "We only had a military purpose." Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, launched extensive missile and drone strikes late on Saturday night, 13th of April, on the Israeli-occupied territories, marking the first direct attack by the Islamic Republic of Iran against the Israeli regime. The series of retaliatory strikes dubbed Operation True Promise inflicted damage on Israeli military bases across the occupied Palestinian lands. It was in retaliation for an earlier Israeli attack on 1st of April against the Iranian consulate building in Damascus, Syria, located next to the Iranian embassy building in Damascus. The airstrike killed two senior Iranian military personnel who were on an advisory mission to Syria, as well as five of their accompanying IRGC officers. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has urged Palestinians to unite amid Israel's ongoing war in Gaza, following an hours-long talk with Hamas's political chief Ismail Haniyeh in Istanbul. Ankara has repeatedly slammed the Israeli regime's incursion into Gaza amid its failed attempt to stop the conflict, which has roiled the Middle East since 7th of October last year. Tensions in the region are running high as Gaza braces for a new Israeli offensive on the southernmost city of Rafah. Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lies in unity and integrity." Erdogan was speaking on Saturday, 20th of April, after the talks at the Dolmabahçe Palace, according to a Turkish presidency statement. As tensions soar in the West Asia region, Recep Tayyip Erdogan said recent events should not allow Israel to gain ground and that it is important to act in a way that keeps attention on the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian resistance group Hamas has had an office in Turkey since 2011, When Turkey helped secure the agreement for the group to free Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit, Recep Tayyip Erdogan has maintained his links with Ismail Haniyeh, the group's political leader who has been a frequent visitor to Turkey. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan urged Palestinians to unite amid Israel's ongoing war in Gaza following hours-long talk with Hamas's political chief Ismail Haniyeh in Istanbul on Saturday, 20th of April. Erdogan has failed to establish a foothold as a mediator in Gaza conflict that has roiled the region. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Palestinian unity was vital following the talks at the Dolmabahçe Palace, which Turkish media reports say lasted more than 2.5 hours. The strongest response to the Israeli regime and the path to victory lies in Palestinian unity and integrity, Erdogan emphasized. As fears of a wider regional war grow, Recep Tayyip Erdogan said, recent events between Iran and Israel should not allow Israel to gain ground and that it is important to act in a way that keeps world attention on the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Qatar has said it will reassess its role as a mediator between the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and the Israeli regime. Recep Tayyip Erdogan has sent the Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan to Doha, Qatar on Wednesday, 17th of April, in a new sign that he wants a role as a mediator.
Economic Divide.
The fact that McDonald's had to buy back all of its franchises from the Israeli regime was proof that the boycott campaign was working. Now, other major brands are worried this campaign will further damage their brand and their profits. Countries in West Asia are the frontrunners in leading the boycott campaign. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tafwi. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, McDonald's buyback. 225 Israeli restaurants. Why? Well, they were battered by boycotts. Along with that came dwindling profits based on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Some major brands are also one of the highlights of the program. When you take a look at those brands, Starbucks, Pizza Hut are some examples that have led to store closures and, of course, a drop in brand loyalty, average median to be about 14%. Then the part of the world that these boycotts are gaining momentum and are actually more than the rest of the world is in West Asia, countries like Jordan and Egypt. Arab governments actually can do more. For example, why not oil boycotts?
The boycott campaign against McDonald's is one prime example of how a boycott can work. In Q4 2023, the fast food brand missed its sales targets for the first time in 4 years, recording growth of 0.7%, well below 5.5% expectations in West Asia, China, and in India. Shares fell 4% on the announcement. And things took a turn for the worse for McDonald's in occupied Palestine. It announced that it would buy back all of its 225 Israeli restaurants after sales suffered from a boycott of the brand over its support for Israel. Alon Yal, which is led and owned by Chief Executive Omri Padan, had operated McDonald's restaurants in Israel for more than 30 years.
Time now to take a look at some of the social media posts. First up, McDonald's has been hit so hard by the international boycotts that they have had to buy out all 225 McDonald's franchises in Israel. Next, who says boycotts don't work? McDonald's lost $7 billion in boycotts over Israeli support. That's according to the CFO, Ian Borden. Then, keep boycotting. Starbucks has lost $12 billion from boycotts worldwide due to its support for Israel. This one says we should boycott taxes. It is our money. Saves us from wars that we pay for and BlackRock, Zionists, cabal banks fund from both sides. Then we should boycott their money system based on greed that they control. Next, you cannot get a state contract in 37 states in America unless you pledge allegiance to Israel first. And finally, your purchase of Israeli and American products or the products of companies that support Israel is funding the crimes of occupation around the world. Those were some of the posts that we thought were interesting. Let's introduce our guests for the first segment of our Q&A. Joining us is Angie Wong from the Daily Morning Show. She's host of The Final Countdown, political commentator on Fox News, Epoch TV, NTD, political contributor for The New York Post, and other U.S. publications. Angie Wong, welcome to Economic Divide.
Thank you for having me on your show.
All right, the first question that I have for you, when you take a look at what's just happened, McDonald's buying back 225 restaurants from Israel. I mean, these are consumers that have boycotted in Muslim-majority countries and Arab countries, which shows the effectiveness of their boycott. Does this mean that the boycott campaign is actually working when it comes down to the genocidal war happening in the Gaza Strip?
Yeah, no, the McDonald's boycott in Israel is certainly showing to be very effective. The McDonald's there supported the Israeli troops by giving them free meals, which is what sparked the initial boycott a few weeks ago. And since then, the entire franchise in Israel for McDonald's has lost so much money that the parent company based out of Chicago has had to buy back its franchises. They cannot show a loss for any McDonald's around the world. So this was their only move, which is to buy it back to take it out of the control of the franchisees. And we're going to start seeing other companies go the same way. Already we have another boycott for Starbucks. We're hearing that Burger King, another big fast food American brand, is also considering the same thing that McDonald's has done.
Very well. Let's introduce our next guest. We have Klein Preston, international attorney, joining us, chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Klein Preston, welcome to Economic Divide.
It's my pleasure.
My question to you here are the boycotts that are happening in countries like Jordan, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey, and the UAE. Basically, these are countries that actually are distancing themselves from Israel. These are regional countries in West Asia. If they have gone that far, why don't they just cut the trade relations during this genocidal war? Some obviously are have a lot of oil. They could stop their oil deliveries to Israel.
That's a good question. I think it's an issue of escalation. During this entire crisis, Turkey, my understanding is, has not cut off gas sales to Israel. And so I think it's more complex than just putting economic sanctions and restricting the sale of necessary commodities such as oil and gas to Israel for a number of reasons that I think only Erdogan and maybe some of the other leaders in that area could answer at this point and calculate what the damage is or would be. I think that it will escalate if this IDF does not leave the Gaza Strip. It will have to, actually. But at this time, it's hard to say why Erdogan, some of the other leaders in the Middle East, would not have implemented more stringent sanctions.
Time now for the Infinews section of the program. First up, we're going to take a look at where France is buying its gas from, and it turns out that it has ramped up its imports of Russian gas. Purchases actually have surged by 75% for the year 2024. The EU, it tried to reduce its energy dependence on Russia. Russian gas supplies had previously made up nearly half of all the bloc's gas imports. Well, it just goes to show you that EU countries cannot follow that and are thirsty for Russian gas. Next entry points to a US.com style crash, where it seems like the US is set for one. Stocks reportedly could be in for a decade of next to nothing returns. Stocks appear to be in the midst of what's called a speculative bubble, which could set investors up for a dead ball era of performance. Next, taking a look at the Chinese currency, the yuan. Officially, it has overtaken the US dollar. Alongside the BRICS de-dollarization plans, the Chinese yuan has officially overtaken the US dollar as the top traded currency, in this case in Russia. Well, the yuan has actually also overtaken the dollar to become the most used currency in China's cross-border transactions. So you can see how the yuan is obviously giving the dollar a run for its money. Next, something that the U.S. has been doing for quite some time, targeting China. The U.S. President Joe Biden, in this case, has blacklisted more Chinese firms than the former U.S. President Donald Trump. The U.S. President has targeted 319 companies and citizens from the Asian nation more than any other administration. Biden not only left in place tariffs imposed by his predecessor, but also increased the pressure, focusing on restrictions that block access to innovation, including those in the artificial intelligence sector. Those were the items that we picked for our Infinews section.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The boycott campaign against McDonald's has been effective, but it's not just brand names that are taking a hit due to their association with the Israeli regime. There are other less known names and even types of boycotts that don't make it to the news. For example, the International Alliance of App-Based Transport Workers, IWATW. Probably never heard of it before. Well, what has become of them is they are comprised of 100,000 members that are spread out in 20 countries. Well, it has boycotted branded gas stations, and that's where it's been effective. Since the year 2020, Chevron is the brand name that it has boycotted when it comes to gasoline. Because Chevron has been extracting fossil gas claimed by Israel in the Eastern Mediterranean, and it has generated billions of dollars for the Israeli regime. So that's one of the things that you have not heard of when it comes to an organization such as that one. Another company that's been targeted and has worked when it comes to boycotts, it's Intel. It goes by INTC. Why? Well, Israel has reaped the rewards of association with Intel because it has invested $25 billion in occupied Palestine. It made that decision in December. That's in the middle of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. Despite all the killings and carnage, it made that decision to do it at that time, which basically means that it's aiding and abetting Israel's apartheid for now decades due to the association that goes back that long. So that's another example that we don't hear much of. Next up, the boycott of Israel academia. That's something that is not highlighted in the news that often. And the reason is pretty obvious, as stated in their slogan, which says, you're committing genocide. Some of the examples that this is happening, and the results of it, invitations to conferences, as you see there, a freeze on hiring Israelis at overseas institutions, rejection of scientific articles on political grounds, and also the disruption of lectures. And finally, a country that has taken a stance when it comes to boycotts has been Turkey, and it finally made a decision to do that after all this time. And basically, the exports is where it has impacted Israel, and that involves 54 categories. A couple of the items are steel and bricks, and that obviously has impacted the Israeli regime quite a bit, because 70% of Israeli imports actually come from Turkey. And the construction sector in Israel, which was impacted due to lack of workers, is now going to take a major hit because of the way that the Turkish government has decided to boycott the Israeli regime when it comes to this sector in particular and its products. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think about all this and more. Rejoining us, we have Angie Wong, Daily Morning News Show and host of The Final Countdown, amongst the other positions that she has had. Angie Wong, welcome back. We're taking a look at boycotts against other brands aside from McDonald's in countries like Jordan, Oman, and Saudi Arabia. These are regional countries. Why do you think they haven't gone and boycotted things like one of their commodities, like oil, when it comes to the Israeli regime?
For consumers, it's a lot easier to protest with their wallets. And there's now being an effort to organize multiple multinational brands to be boycotted that support Israel. I was just looking at a list right now. HP, for example, Hewlett Packard, that's being also boycotted. And there are several American brands that are visible. And there are many, many websites now coming online to boycott any sort of corporate support that supports Israel. So I think that's where it begins, because it's a lot harder to get governments and government officials to start, you know, doing the big stuff, cutting off funding to Israel, for example. So, but, you know, for I guess, protesters and people who don't align with Israel, the most easy thing to do is to do a boycott with consumer goods.
Okay, what about the fact that you have politicians that need to play a part in this? Are they hearing the voices of the protesters when it comes to boycotting Israeli branded products?
Politicians are hearing this. They are seeing visibly how much the Israeli narrative has changed since October 7th, where they once had support. The support has been waning, and this I've never seen anything so sizable of a shift before October 7th. Now I'm really starting to see, even here in the U.S., how much of the country is not for Israel, and how can anyone be? We're seeing the images of just horror coming out of Gaza. It's very difficult to support this ongoing. I do wish that Israel would support a ceasefire of some sort, because the governments, I think they're saying one thing. They're saying ceasefire. We want ceasefire, but they're also saying to Israel, go, 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 go. And I think that's where the consumers are saying, we know better. You can't tell us one thing and do something else. So now they've taken to the resort of banning and boycotting certain brands that support Israel.
All right, very well. Let's bring in our next guest, Klein Preston, who rejoins us, international attorney and chairman of the Governing Committee for Independent Foreign Observers. Klein Preston, welcome back to Economic Divide. We are taking a look at the McDonald's boycott initiative, which has sparked actually further boycotts of major brands like Starbucks, which has hurt, obviously, its bottom line. Do you think these boycott campaigns on these brand names, especially, are affected enough to impact Israel's economy?
Sadly, I believe no, because Israel has such a strong lobbying presence in the United States that they will persevere to meet the goals that they have set forth, which are genocide. There's no question that that's the mantra that both Jewish Americans and I think the majority of Jews in Israel are ascribing to and supporting. And I think that just a couple of companies that are being boycotted that, even though they may have American ownership, at least as the, far as the franchisor is concerned, it's not going to have an effect. They will do whatever they have to do to continue to kill people in Gaza and commit genocide, essentially. And the American money that's going to support them through the American Jewish community is going to stand fast with the IDF and the Netanyahu government, even as distasteful as that is to many people, both in Israel and the United States, including some of the people in our Congress who have spoken out against Mr. Netanyahu. But I don't think it's going to have that great of an effect because of the American money supporting the actions that are occurring in Israel now.
All right, Angie Wong, I'd like to get your thoughts on this because we are looking at what should be the ultimate, I mean, the goal, and that is for the Israeli economy to be impacted by this. Do you think that it is through the boycott campaigns of different things and brand names, for example?
You're asking whether or not the boycott of these larger brands will affect the economy of Israel. I don't know the economic numbers for something like a Starbucks or a McDonald's, but you better believe if the parent company is pulling the franchisee's license from the Israeli licensee holders, they are definitely getting hit by the bottom line and their profits. And McDonald's cannot show that there's any losses, right? Because it's bad for the worldwide franchise. So it is effective in that sense, but also to protect the brand. Because clearly, McDonald's, the parent company here in the U.S., saw that the local franchisees in Israel, well, they were getting political with their brand. And that is what corporations stay away from. They don't want to be political. In fact, they probably have policies for franchisees to not engage in politics because it hurts their overall worldwide brand. So I can see McDonald's and Starbucks and Burger King, KFC, all the way down the line, pulling their brand if the franchisee becomes political. And in this instance, by giving free meals to the Israeli soldiers, that turned McDonald's into something that is not a you know, a Switzerland of brands where they stay out of wars and conflicts, but it is clearly in support of the soldiers. Whether you agree with that or not, that is probably going against their franchisee's licensing agreement.
McDonald's has blamed the boycott campaign on misinformation about its brand. It all started when McDonald's franchise in Israel, run by Alonia Limited, said it would provide free meals to Israeli regime forces as well as hospitals. That said, there was also another motive for McDonald's to be targeted. Over the years, the stores with their highly recognizable golden arches have been repeatedly targeted as symbols of the United States, especially in West Asia. As such, the U.S. is known to not only conduct wars, but also to be a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Examples are the Second Palestinian Intifada, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, and the Arab Spring protests, especially in Cairo, Egypt.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. Mahdi Abbasian is on assignment. The boycott campaign against Israel is in full swing. Although McDonald's has suffered, other major brands are also taking a hit. Let's take the case of Coca-Cola, but from the angle of why it needs to be targeted. Well, Coca-Cola operates in a settlement in occupied Palestine that's called Atarat, an illegal Israeli settlement located in the occupied West Bank. For the settlement of Atarat to be built, Palestinian homes were demolished, and their original residents were banned from returning despite residing there for generations. By having an Israeli franchise in the illegal Israeli settlement of Atarat, Coca-Cola is ignoring international law and is profiting from the illegal occupation. Atarat is one of 250 illegal settlements. Therefore, selling Coca-Cola helps sustain Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine, as it allows Coca-Cola to profit from the land stolen from Palestinians. Now, in the West Asia region, sensitivities to Israeli-linked products are at an all-time high. Consumers in this part of the world are making a concerted effort not to purchase products that lead to Israel profiting from its genocidal war. Billboards, for example, in Kuwait have pictures of children covered in blood, accompanied by the shocking "Did you kill a Palestinian today?" alongside the hashtag boycotters. In Qatar, some Western companies were forced to close after their management published pro-Israel content on social media. The branches of the American cafe Pura Vida Miami and the French pastry shop Maître Choux closed their doors in Doha. There are some unexpected positive outcomes resulting from the U.S.-Israeli genocidal aggression against Palestinians, like a case in Egypt. The Egyptian carbonated drinks company Spiro Spathis, which was not very popular before the aggression, has now become extremely popular as an alternative to Pepsi and Coca-Cola after calls to boycott both. The company, which was founded back in the year 1920, published a statement on its Facebook page as an example, stating that it had received more than 15,000 CVs when it announced that it was hiring extra staff in order to expand its activities given the higher demand for its products. This is just one of many examples of how local products are now the choice instead of the major brands. That does it for this quick take section. Hope you liked it. The success of the boycott campaign has been catapulted into another level ever since the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. There's no denying in that. Well, the longer the war drags on, the more effective and widespread the campaign will be. But what this campaign has done is to also turn the focus on domestic production in the respective countries, who are obviously Palestine-friendly, and of course, it has highlighted the plight of the Palestinians. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoyed it. From the Kavitahli and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
A coalition of 34 Harvard University student organizations has condemned the Israeli regime's bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper, the Boston Herald, has covered this story and tells us more. The Harvard Law School student government has passed a resolution calling on the university to fully divest from any institution that supports the ongoing Israeli genocide of Palestinians in war-torn Gaza. The resolution pushes the Harvard Management Company, HMC, which oversees the university's $50 billion endowment, to divest completely from weapons manufacturers, firms, academic programs, corporations, and all other institutions that aid the ongoing occupation of Palestine and the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. In the resolution, the Harvard Law School student government points to Harvard's investment of nearly $200 million in companies tied to the Israeli military and illegal Israeli settlements in Palestine, as well as the Harvard Management Company's previous divestment from South African apartheid regime in 1986 and the tobacco industry in 1990. The resolution's author, Harvard Law School student Swap Agrawal, who also serves as co-president of the law school student government, said members of the body have heard from students who felt strongly that this call was necessary to put pressure on things to change. Agrawal said in a statement on Friday night, 29th of March, Palestinian students at Harvard Law School have lost dozens of family members in the ongoing genocide. Students are deeply troubled that money held in trust for their benefit is being used to support that genocide. Agrawal revealed the resolution was influenced by the International Court of Justice's statement in January, which found it plausible that Israel has engaged in actions that breached the Genocide Convention. Two board members stepped down following the resolution vote, where 12 members supported, 4 opposed, and 3 abstained. Regina Denigris and Cameron Atkins wrote in their resignation letter that they stepped down because they strongly disagreed with the resolution being considered by the student government. They claimed that an anonymity motion passed at a 26th of March meeting was in violation of a provision of the student government constitution stating that all votes of the student council should be held in open session and minutes shall be made public. In a statement on Friday, 29th of March, Harvard University spokesperson Jason Newton made it clear it opposes calls for a policy of boycotting Israel and its academic institutions, citing former university president Lawrence Bako's response to the Crimson Editorial Board's 2022 endorsement of the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement. Earlier this year, Claudine Gay, former president of Harvard, stepped down after pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campus amid Israel's ongoing war in Gaza and also accusations of plagiarism. During a testimony, Claudine Gay faced criticism for not addressing the issue of the so-called genocide of Jews as a violation of Harvard's code of conduct. Some members of Congress also accused Gay of not doing enough to condemn and combat anti-Semitism on Harvard's campus. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered this story and tells us more. A coalition of 34 Harvard University student organizations has condemned the Israeli regime's bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. In a statement published recently, the students said they hold the Israeli regime entirely responsible for all unfolding violence in Gaza. The statement added, "The apartheid regime is the only one to blame." The organizations signing the letter, including Muslim and Palestinian support groups as well as others named for a variety of backgrounds, including the Harvard Jews for Liberation and the African American Resistance Organization. Harvard University has produced 8 former presidents and 4 of the 9 current Supreme Court justices. However, Harvard University alumni criticized the pro-Palestinian statement and urged the university to take action against the signatories. Lawrence Summers, the former U.S. Treasury Secretary under President Bill Clinton and former university president, was one of several Harvard graduates to criticize the current Harvard leadership for failing to declare clear support for Israel. Recently, New York City Mayor Eric Adams drew fire for promoting violence and Islamophobia over his remarks referring to pro-Palestine protesters as extremists. Hundreds of people marched in Manhattan to express their support for Palestine. The Israeli regime has started its war machine against the Palestinians in the wake of a surprise major operation by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas against the occupiers. The multi-pronged operation was launched from Gaza in response to months of violence against the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the continued presence of Israeli extremists in the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. Independent observers believe that Washington and its Western allies have been active partners in the Israeli regime's ongoing crimes and atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza. The website Axios has also covered the same story. The chief executive officers running a whole host of American business giants have urged the blacklisting of the Harvard University students who recently signed a statement calling out Israel for the developments that have been unfolding across the occupied territories and the Gaza Strip over the past several months. The chief executive officers, who run a whole host of American business giants, demanded the witch hunt 2 days after the issuance of the statement by a coalition of 34 Harvard University organizations. The students said they hold the Israeli regime entirely responsible for all unfolding violence in Gaza. Calling up an unprecedented 300,000 reservists, the Israeli regime has declared a long war on Gaza in response to Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. Gaza's resistance movement initiated the operation in response to the occupying regime's decades-long campaign of bloodshed and destruction against Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli war has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, including women and children. The military campaign has seen the regime leveling entire districts of Gaza and featured its use of banned white phosphorus munitions against the densely populated neighborhoods in Gaza. The Harvard University student statement said the apartheid regime is the only one to blame for the developments in Gaza. Moving ahead of the others, billionaire hedge fund chief executive officer Bill Ackman demanded that Harvard University release the names of the students. Bill Ackman said in a post on X, "If the members support the letter, the names of the signatories should be made public so their views are publicly known."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth within